Chapter 31. What's in a name?
It's called the breech, and that small hole there is called the touch hole. You put the brand to that and light the powder in the vent. That sets off the charge in the chamber, which is the inside part at the bottom of the bore, Crispin explained, pointing as he went along.
And how do you prepare it for another shot? Kyrus asked. He had gone below decks to find out more about how cannons worked, since Brannis would be facing them in battle all too soon. If there were weaknesses to be exploited, he wanted to know about them. Crispin had been the gunnery mate aboard the Harbinger when it was still an Accardian vessel, and he was gunnery mate aboard the newly rededicated Fair Trader, the name Captain Zane had chosen for his ship. They had been out of port for a day, and the ship teemed with bodies. They had sailed into Marker's Point with fewer than 24 men, and now departed with over 80. They might have stayed longer and found even better sailors among the outcasts of Marker's Point, but Captain Zane had been wary of staying too long after Kyrus's mishap, just in case the authorities were able to make a connection between them and the incident.
You swab out the bore, wet, mind you, then you load a new charge, wadding, and you shot. Fill the vent with powder again and it's ready to fire, Crispin explained.
He seemed eager to show off his knowledge of the guns, a topic that few aboard were interested in. One was either a gunner or not, and those who were not gunners assumed that it was someone else's job to worry about how they worked.
Fascinating. And how far can they fire? And...
So where are we heading now? Kyrus asked, leaning over the map. It showed the vicinity of Marker's Point and a few days sailing in any direction.
We are heading to here. Stalyard pointed to a small cluster of islands to the southeast, the largest of which was labeled as Denku Apa.
They were not as remote as Marker's Point, but were still at least 100 miles off the coast of Feru Maru, the nearest large landmass.
What is in Denku Apa? It seems a bit out of the way. I mean, I thought the same of Marker's Point, but this does not seem the sort of place to attract trade the way Marker's Point does.
You are correct, Mr. Hinterdale. There is not so much there,
Stalyard agreed.
But it has two things which very much interest Captain Zane. He kept a treasure stashed there, one that he had not told me about until last night. They also have very beautiful women there, and it is warm all year round, so they do not wear much.
Stalyard winked at him. That was all good for Stalyard and Captain Zane. They could have all this scantily clad island women they wanted for all he cared. He just wanted to find a way to see Abelay again.
Well, it looks like we can be there the day after tomorrow, Kyrus concluded, examining the map for the moment and measuring the distance on the map with a compass.
Stalyard had yet to trust him without checking his calculations, but Kyrus had yet to be wrong. The older pirate did his ciphering on a slate with a piece of chalk, accounting for known currents and the prevailing winds. Kyrus managed the same tasks in his head and was quicker about it. It was something Stalyard could not grasp, and it made him assume Kyrus was guessing.
Mr. Stalyard, can I ask you something? Kyrus asked, realizing that he had just asked something.
Of course.
Who is Captain Zane in the other world? Kyrus said. There was no harm in trying, he supposed.
He is a Magrin sorcerer. A good one, too, by all the pleasant words I hear spoken of him when I travel in Magrin lands. He was a hero of the war they fought to free themselves from your people. In the city of Zorin, there are 5 statues in the central square. The Liberators, they are called. Captain Zane is one of those statues.
Really?
Kyrus was genuinely surprised. They made a statue of him.
Indeed. The Magrin people suffered much at the hands of the Cadrans. It was a great day when word came that Cadran had agreed to peace and allowed them to rule themselves once again, Stalyard said.
The first mate seemed to be enamored of the Magrin, but that seemed appropriate for a merchant such as himself. Magrin produced little food and was not rich in resources like Cadran was. They bought and sold, and each time took a little for themselves. It was enough to make a nice living for their people, but it left them vulnerable to blockades and embargoes.
So who is he? Anyone I would have heard of? Kyrus persisted.
I think not. Have you heard of Jinzan Fair?
The name does not sound familiar. Is that even a Magrin name?
Ha! Very observant, Mr. Hinterdale. His father was from Gardanel, outside of Cadran. It is much less uncommon to marry a foreigner. Of Jinzan's fair's three wives, only one is Magrin, Stalyard boasted, as if it was his own feat to be proud of.
Three wives? I did not think the Magrin kept harems. Is that a holdover from Gardanel as well?
No, no. They lost many men in the war. Too many. They were widows and daughters and no men to marry them off to. They allowed men to have two wives. For the liberators, they were allowed as many wives as would have them. If there is one lesson they took from you Cadran murderers, it is that strong blood keeps a nation strong, Stalyard said.
For the first time, Kairos heard bitterness in the man's voice. It seemed there was some grudge to be had against Cadran there, too. Do you think Magrin is going to actually manage to conquer Cadran? Just 20 years ago, they were part of the Empire. I cannot imagine they have changed things there so quickly, Kairos said. He did not know why he felt he had to defend the glory of the Empire from a pirate, but he had to get to the core issue at hand as well. What Captain Zane was up to in Vaedras.
I do not know. I think they will try. I think their cause is right. The one weapon they have that Cadran never learned is how to make friends. Cadran has no allies. You stand alone, Stalyard said sadly.
Mr. Stalyard, what would you say if I told you I would much prefer peace between Cadran and Magrin, and that if Captain Zane starts a war, Magrin will be wiped out?
I would say that in 20 years, Cadran has grown weaker and Magrin has grown stronger. With help of knowledge of this world for cannons and black powder, Captain Zane will make them stronger still. With allies, he will make them strong enough that Cadran will be forced to surrender.
No, Kairos replied. Cadran is stronger than you imagine. If you can convince him to make peace, we can save untold lives.
Why do you care so much? You are a brigand who preys on merchants and who kills when it suits you. Why should you care about Magrin lives? Stalyard asked.
Kairos knew at that point that the canny sailor had not believed his story. The maps and charts lay forgotten on the table next to them as the ship continued on its course, vaguely in the proper direction. Kairos had no proper response for Stalyard, at least none that was consistent with the life story he had given.
You work with the captain, and you will be fine, Stalyard advised. There is no need to get involved in the war. Find yourself a nice nobleman to serve and pass information along to the Magrin. Captain Zane will see in return that you are taken care of. The Magrin are not like you Cadrans. I know I have traveled in both lands, and I see the differences. You will not be put to slaughter.
Kairos swallowed hard.
Magrin will. You are young. You do not see the changing of the world. The pendulum swings, and then it swings back.
It just got pulled back our way, Kairos said. I know too much already. We are ready for war. Please, try to convince the captain.
Convince him yourself. You have fooled him before. Go fool him again if you must. I will not stop you from trying.
Where did you learn that? Denric protested. I went through the academy in Cadran and never have I seen such tactics. I have played many Magrin sorcerers as well, and I can usually acquit myself well enough, even in losing. I know not a single player who would be your equal. There's your problem. You've learned from the wrong world. Kairos smiled. He had challenged the captain to a game of chess, and one game had turned to 5. Denric Zane was a proud man and wanted to at least manage a draw before admitting defeat overall. I literally wrote the book on chess several times, Kairos said.
Set up the pieces again. I shall not let you off so easily as that. Try that same trick as last time, and I shall have a response for it.
And stop making those pointless moves in the middle, taunting me, Denric said. The little chess set they had found on the ship consisted of a heavy board with small pegs sticking up at the center of each square, and each piece had a hole in the bottom to fit snugly down onto those pegs. It kept the game from shifting and being ruined by the motion of the ship.
The Akkadian Navy had too much time on their hands developing such diversions.
Those moves you do not understand are the reason I keep beating you. Just because you cannot see what is going on does not mean that there is nothing happening.
Kairos worded his statements carefully. He was trying to lead up to the point of his conversation, that he knew what Magrin was up to, and not just in the general sense, and that they were following a path to ruin.
So you say. Another 3 games passed, and Denric was finally nearing the point of admitting total defeat. He ran his fingers along his scalp, where a fine stubble was finally starting to resemble hair again, and sighed in frustration. It apparently felt good for him to flex the muscles of his mind, but he wanted to find some result in it.
I think you must be cheating somehow. I see no other way you could win so many times in a row, Denric accused after the 9th game.
You cannot cheat at chess. The pieces are right there in front of both of us the whole time.
I would not have thought you could cheat at crackle either, at least not without my noticing.
Denric glared at him. Kairos flushed, unaware that the captain had caught on somehow.
This is a pirate ship. I assumed everyone else was cheating, Kairos said.
Denric chuckled.
So your excuse was that you thought you did not want to be the only one at a disadvantage. So what were you doing here to win at chess?
Outplaying you badly, I'm afraid. I have no need to cheat to beat you. I must admit an ulterior motive, though. I wanted to show you that just because you do not always understand what you are seeing does not mean that it is not a danger.
What is that supposed to mean? Denric asked, his eyes narrowing.
Kairos sighed within. Denric was a stubborn man and clearly not prone to enjoying lessons. He would occasionally teach them, but preferred to think of himself as having all the answers he needed.
You are planning a war with Kadrin. You cannot prevail. Lives will be lost on a scale you have not seen in your lifetime, and your cities will burn to the ground, Kairos said.
Your loyalty to them is admirable, brigand, but you do not understand the strategic situation as well as I do. Shall I lay it out before you?
Kairos saw no need to answer and allowed Denric to continue.
Kadrin has been in decline for decades. You overextended your reach under Liad's reign and made enemies of the whole of the continent. Lorimar's wars against you sapped your strength and wasted the lives of many of your sorcerers. When Roshan Solaran was destroyed in the Battle of the Dead Earth, it marked the beginning of your fall. The Kadrin Empire curled into a ball and licked its wounds, guarding its sorcerers against harm, rather than risking losing their precious bloodlines. Even now, with war at hand, they cower in their towers and plot, rather than acting against Magrin, Denric said.
Tides change, Kairos said, attempting a nautical metaphor. The rocks are about to be exposed, and if you do not take care, you will run aground.
Mr. Hinderdale, you should stick to cheating at crackle. You have no subtlety.
What are you on about? What is it that you know that you are trying so desperately not to tell me, despite dangling it before me? Denric demanded.
I know what you are planning. I know your goblin allies have taken your cannons to Rainsdark and intend to conquer it. I even suspect that you are there with them personally, Kairos guessed. He was fairly certain but had no way of confirming who the human liaison was. If he guessed correctly, he might be able to convince Denric to avert the disaster he was inviting.
Still going to insist you are a brigand, Mr. Hinterdale?
I have my sources. Rumors travel far and fast, and I believe there's one rumor that you have missed out on, being with the goblins instead of at home in Magrin, Kairos said. He wanted to see if Denric, or Jinzan, he supposed, had heard about the return of Roshan. He could only surmise that he had not, or his certainty in a Magrin victory could not be so total.
Yes, we found out about the demon you keep company with. One of the goblin assassins confronted him and was allowed to escape alive. I am sorry, but if that demon of yours could not kill a simple assassin, the Magrin army will find nothing to fear either, Denric responded, trying to take the wind out of Kairos's sails.
So that is it then. Even with a demon on our side, you still persist in wanting to bring war, Kairos asked. He was not yet ready to reveal that it was Roshan who had returned to them. It was too incredible a story,
and even those who had seen him personally had trouble believing it at first.
Mr. Hinderdale,
Kyrus,
you are fighting on the wrong side in this conflict. You will get conscripted. I cannot imagine them tolerating brigandry in wartime, and you will have to fight on the losing side in the coming war. Align yourself with us, and you can be a lord of the seas in Tel-Urak, and a nobleman in occupied Kadrin in Vaedras. I could arrange that.
Kyrus had not accepted Denric's offer, nor had he declined. He was unsure which option would serve him best, though he had no intention of actually joining forces with Jinzan Fair and his Magrin compatriots, nor their goblin allies. On the one hand, he might be able to get more information out of Denric if he agreed to join him. On the other, he might let slip something vital from his own side. It would all come down to his ability to maintain a lie. That ability had been called into question when he found out that Denric had caught on to his cheating, though he was unaware what gave him away. Still, it ruled out Crackle as a way of making extra money on board the Fair Trader, and was a warning shot across his bow that his lies were not going entirely unnoticed. Kyrus stared out to sea, watching the endless waters roll. With his ether vision, he was able to see the sea creatures near the water's surface, and paused to watch an enormous school of fish flee from several sharks that had gathered in the area. With practice, it was getting easier to keep his vision split between the ether and the normal world. It was fascinating to him to see the sources of all those tiny little fish in the water. As the ship passed over the area where the fray was taking place, Kyrus took pity on the poor little fishes. Locking his attention onto one of the sharks, he felt for its source, a shabby, weak thing for a creature that large and fierce, and drew at it. The shark had no means of resisting, and its source gave up its scant ether with little fuss. The shark became a lifeless carcass in the water and continued on for a moment before it floated up to the surface. Kyrus did not even feel the urgency of the ether he had trapped inside him. It was little enough that he could safely hold it without even exerting himself. He killed the other sharks within his reach in a similar manner. Kyrus had first wondered about whether it was possible for him to kill just by drawing from a source after he was attacked in Marker's Point. In his panic, he had drawn ether as hard as he could, and though his memories of the event were hazy, he was certain that he remembered the first of his attackers falling limp before the blast that destroyed so much of the area around him. Marker's Point. It reminded him of the tattoo on his arm. They were only 2 days removed from the events of that day, both the tattoo and the attack. The ward carved on his upper arm had saved Kyrus's life that night, there was no doubt. But what had the cost been? Captain Zane had called him a fool and told him that it would leech from his own source, but he had yet to feel any such effect. Is it possible that my source is strong enough that I do not notice the loss of ether I am experiencing? Or perhaps I am just too new at this whole business to be able to tell I am being affected? Kyrus took his meal in the mess with the men that night. He felt more at ease among the rabble of the ship's crew now that he was confident in the workings of his tattoo ward. Let one of them come at him with a blade, and he would not be so helpless as poor Rugler, killed in his sleep by a goblin. It was better than dining with the captain and worrying about whether he would accidentally betray the defenders at Rainsdark by something he said. Sooner or later, the goblins would attack, and until then, he would stay clear of the captain as best he could. Kyrus had learned almost for certain that Denric's counterpart Jinzan was with the goblin army. He now knew that Jinzan was revered among the Magrin, so he might make a valuable captive. Though that was a new idea and he had no idea how to go about taking captive a sorcerer of the power alluded to by Denric and Stalyart. He knew that Stalyart had traveled to Kadrin, and that both he and Denric saw the Kadrin Empire as weakened.
"Hey!" shouted one of the newcomers aboard the Fair Trader. "I hear you's a witch."
Kyrus was pressed between two of Denric's men at the table, Grosh and Jiminy, among a throng present in the mess. He could not see who had called out to him.
"I am a wizard, not a witch," Kyrus yelled back to the room in general, keeping his gaze in his tankard.
The ale was not half bad, purchased in quantity in Marker's Point by a few discerning men among the crew who liked a change from rum now and again.
"What's the difference?" he heard another shout back.
"Witches brew potions and cast hexes, and you can never be sure whether they are really using magic at all or just tricking you. And they are female by definition. A wizard such as myself throws fire and commands the winds, and ought not be bothered when he is in his cups," Kyrus retorted. There was a chuckle among the men at that last part.
"Come on, then. Show us some magic, then, eh?"
"Yeah, put on a show."
"Dance for us, witch."
The drunken voices clamored for him to show his power. They had heard rumors about the destruction in Marker's Point, and many were skeptical when they heard that it was the thin, bookish lad that Captain Zane had aboard.
"I'll light one of them on fire, why don't you?" Jiminy whispered to him. "That'll shut him up right quick."
Kyrus could tell that Jiminy was uneasy aboard the Fair Trader. He was aware that Captain Zane had brought some of his fellow prisoners from New Hope Colony aboard, and they were every bit as much not sailors as he was. Kyrus had shown some empathy with the land dwellers, and they had begun attaching themselves to him to avoid the wrath of the seafaring cutthroats that were increasing in population on the ship. "Magic is no toy to be trifled with," Kyrus replied to those who had been egging him on, ignoring Jiminy's advice, tempting though it might be. "It is enjoyable, but only for the one using it. If the sight of it amuses you, so be it. But I am not here as your fool. If any of you wish to see me use magic, draw steel with ill intent in my presence."
"Ah, what a load. He ain't no witch."
Kyrus scanned the room, trying to identify the speaker. He did not want to have this conversation every time he decided to take a meal among the crew. "Whomever just said that, show yourself," Kyrus said, feigning anger and standing suddenly. "Whoever was next to you knows who you are. I shall go to the main deck, and anyone who wishes to have evidence that my magic is real can join me." With that, Kyrus extracted himself from the crowded bench and made his way through the mess.
"I must be crazed. I just threw down a gauntlet before an entire gang of pirates. I could really use someone here who I could trust to talk some sense into me."
Kyrus had expected that a small group might follow him to the deck, but in his wake, nearly every man among them was coming to see. He had underestimated just how little there was of interest aboard a ship, and how much the men craved action.
"I wonder what I ought to do to convince them. Jiminy would have me kill one just to set an example, but I would rather not become a murderer just to have some peace on the ship."
When they arrived on deck, Kyrus decided on a plan. "All of you who believe I'm a wizard, move to this side of the deck." And Kyrus gestured to the port side of the ship, which was at his left at the moment. "Those who were not sure, step to the other side." The men did not budge at first, but Kyrus snapped at them.
"Move!"
The men lazily arranged themselves to one side of the ship or the other, with many of them seeming undecided. There was much muttering, but after some exhortations, Kyrus was able to get two distinct groups. First, Kyrus let loose a burst of hurled fire. He made it a quick one, with little risk to the rigging, just a quick jet of flame from his hand. There were gasps among the crew, but he heard skeptics as well.
"Street magician trick. I saw a fella in yellow do that same thing. I ain't believing it still."
Still, a few moved from one side of the ship to the other. Next, Kyrus lifted one of the belaying pins, using telekinesis. He had been practicing with it silently and was able to manage to move the pin without having to audibly cast the spell. It was the first time he had tried it outside his cabin, though, and he was pleased not to have botched it.
"More tricks. I was hoping for something more impressive than that."
Again, though, a handful were swayed. There still remained more than 20 in the skeptical group, and Kyrus was about to put an end to that.
"Haru bidesi lioki quatuan gelora," he chanted, taking no risks this time.
When he swept up his arms, every last one of the group of skeptics lifted into the air. Telekinesis was a remarkably efficient spell, he found, and despite so many heavy bodies,
he barely felt the strain of holding them aloft. Not content to suffer the sworn oaths and pleas for mercy from the now far less skeptical group of pirates, he slowly brought them over the railings of the ship. He took care not to let any of them get within arm's reach of the rigging as he guided them out over the open, shark-infested waters with no land in sight in any direction.
"How's this for a trick? Do you like tricks?" Kairos called out to them. "I told you that none enjoy magic but the one wielding it. Do you believe me now? Would any of you like to see more? I have more."
There were none left among the skeptics when Kairos returned the airborne men to the deck. He had made enemies that night, he knew, but he would learn to live with that. Let them fear him, despise him even, but he would not be the laughingstock of the ship. He was beginning to suspect that he would not be able to stay long aboard, given the situation with Denric, and so the prospect of long-term allies was less of a concern for him. Kairos stalked past the crew without addressing any of them. He was tired and worried, to some extent about the tattoo and what it might one day do to his source, but mainly about Brannis. It was time to get to sleep early tonight, to see what was going to befall.